You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hand. Today is Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. It's the midpoint of our week. We have episodes every Monday through Friday. Hopefully, I'll be able to put out episodes this Thursday and Friday, considering my travel plans. I am leaving for the airport in just a few minutes after I record this episode to head to San Jose for my sister's wedding, and like I said, hopefully I'll be able to get out normal episodes for Thursday and Friday, and then for Monday of next week. On Monday of next week, I come back home to New York, and then I'll be, you know, back in my normal schedule. But it's going to be a little funky for the rest of the week, so bear with me if episodes aren't there at their normal time, or maybe the episodes might be cut short a little bit. Today's episode isn't going to be as long as normal. I know I normally go a little over 30 minutes, but today definitely not doing that as I get ready to head to the airport. So the Clippers play the Atlanta Hawks tonight in their last pre-All-Star game. And I think it's a big game momentum-wise just because it's a winnable game. And the Clippers have won their last three winnable games, being New York, Charlotte, and Utah. And I have a chance to have basically four wins in a row without Chris Paul, which has to feel really good for the other guys on the team, especially Blake Griffin, who's carrying the team, but also for the guards. Kind of playing without Chris Paul with those huge shoes to fill have been doing a good job in the last few games. No one's going to be Chris Paul, but they're doing enough to help the team win by being Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford and Raymond Felton. J.J. Redick hasn't played great, but the other three guys have really contributed in big ways. And so I think going against Atlanta, this is another really winnable game. I'm pretty sure they beat the Hawks a few weeks ago without Chris and Blake when both guys were hurt. So you have to think, if you can win without both of them in Atlanta, you could definitely win with Blake back at home. It's not saying that the Clippers will win, but it's that it's a winnable game. And if they want to catch Houston for the three seed, or at least maybe the better way to put it would be if they want to position themselves so that they have a chance to catch Houston in the back stretch of the season when Chris Paul comes back. If they want to position themselves to do that, this is the kind of game they can't afford to lose, really. No game is a must-win when it's an 82-game season because it's so long, but eventually things start to add up. And this is one that I think it wouldn't necessarily be a bad loss, because Atlanta's not a bad team and the Clippers are without Chris Paul, and it's, you know, they just had 10 of 11 on the road, and the first game back after a long road trip is always hard, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You might not call this a bad loss if the Clippers lose this game, but it certainly wouldn't be something that you can just dismiss. Like the Golden State losses, you almost go like the Clippers, you know, at least for me, it's like the Clippers just can't. They aren't as good as them. That's not to say that they shouldn't ever beat them, but it's like you lose to Golden State by 15 and you kind of shrug your shoulders and say, yeah, you know, that's kind of where we are as a team. Atlanta's a game that you don't kind of write off so easily. It was the same thing on this road trip. I think at Boston was a really tough game, even though it was winnable. I think at Toronto on the second night of a back-to-back was a really tough game, even though the Clippers actually were in it a little bit at the end. But it's easy to accept a 3-2 road trip when the losses are at Boston, at Toronto, back-to-back. It's a little harder to accept, I think, a loss to Atlanta tonight. But I don't want to get too bogged down in the game-by-game details. Like I said, the Clippers played the Hawks a couple weeks ago, so we talked a little bit about their team there. I'm a huge Paul Millsap fan, so hopefully I'll get in to San Jose tonight. or I'll actually get in the afternoon, and hopefully I'll be able to get settled. I don't know where I'm staying. Yeah, I don't know where I'm staying in San Jose. I think I have a hotel. I don't know. Wherever I'm staying in San Jose, hopefully I'll be able to get like Wi-Fi or something, so I can watch NBA League Pass and see the Clippers game tonight, time commitments permitting, because you know how weddings go. I'm gonna have like every second cousin and step uncle and whatever to go say hi to. But hopefully I'll be able to lock myself in a hotel room for a couple hours to watch the Clippers tonight, especially because it's the last game for a week, and I know I'm gonna have like serious Clipper withdrawals because they don't play again until next Thursday. So yeah, I hope I get like 2.5 hours just like me and my headphones and my computer to watch the Clippers tonight. Maybe, I don't know, does that make me antisocial? Let me, you can let me know on Twitter, at Lucas J. Han, if you don't already follow me or tweet at me. When you go someplace, like, to a family vacation where you're, like, around a bunch of people or, like, a work retreat or whatever it is, do you sneak off and watch Clippers games? Because, because I do. When I went to my aunt and uncle's house for Thanksgiving, because I'm from the Los Angeles area, I'm from Santa Clarita, but I now live in New York, so I don't go home to my parents for Thanksgiving. But what I've done in the last couple of years is my girlfriend Hannah and I will drive down to Virginia where my aunt and uncle live, and we'll have Thanksgiving with them, and it's been really nice. This year, and you know, last year wasn't quite the same, but this year, I really, when the Clippers played, I just kind of snuck away into the guest bedroom where we were staying, and headphones and laptop, and I watch the game, and then I go back, and you know, I have other family down there, like great aunts and second cousins, and it's like I just kind of ignore everyone for 2.5 hours to watch the Clippers game. Do you guys do that? Am I the only person who does that? Does anyone else kind of like blow off their family for a couple hours on vacation so they can go watch the Clippers? I don't know. I get to say, like, it's like the cheesiest excuse ever, right? But I'm like, oh, I have to go watch the Clippers. I'm working. Maybe you guys don't get to say that. I don't know. I get to say that. This is pretty cool. I want to transition a little bit in the second part of this episode. Like I said, it's going to be a relatively short one because I am running to the airport shortly. I want to transition into trade rumors a little bit, and maybe sort of like a trade deadline primer for the Clippers. Obviously, there was a big deal that got done in the NBA yesterday. It was Serge Ibaka to the Toronto Raptors, Terrence Ross, and the Clippers' 2017 first-round pick heading back to Orlando. I don't want to get too much into like who won and who lost the trade or any of that, because I know, you know, if you want to look into it, there's like some really interesting transaction trees when you look at like the Raptors trading Rudy Gay several years ago for the pieces that they got for him, and then trading those subsequent pieces, and like who left in free agency, who stayed, who this draft pick turned out to be, and they basically turned Rudy Gay into four of their current rotation players. Whereas you look at the flip side, and the Magic last summer gave up what some people thought was an overpay to acquire Ibaka, and now halfway through the season, under 500, they dumped him off. So they basically traded like the 11th pick in last year's draft and Victor Oladipo for Terrence Ross and like the 27th pick in this year's draft, which is not necessarily a great trade. We're probably downgrading as far as a young wing prospect goes, even though Oladipo might be a little overrated. And then moving from pick 11 to pick 27, I mean, I bet you they'd like, as they decide to rebuild, they'd probably rather have Sabonis than who ended up being the 11th pick and is now starting for the Oklahoma City Thunder. You'd probably rather have Sabonis than Serge Ibaka, since they have to trade him because they don't want to pay him this summer. But it brings up an interesting point, and that is Serge Ibaka's trade value has drastically shifted because he's going to be a free agent this summer, and teams don't want to pay him. He's a guy that teams aren't sure about. And that's not the case for every expiring contract. Like, you look at a guy like Gordon Hayward. I don't think Gordon Hayward's trade value is necessarily affected because everyone, you know, like, if Boston traded for Gordon Hayward, they'd give him a max salary, and Utah's going to give him a max salary. So I don't think that's so much of an issue. But you look at guys like Serge Ibaka, who maybe are, you know, you worry about, like, if you give them a 4 or 5 year deal, how are they going to be in the fourth or fifth year? Are they still going to be contributing? And then just, you know, is he a core piece or is he a complementary piece? And if he's a core piece, do you want to be committing potentially, you know, it could be upwards of $20 million a year for Serge Ibaka. And so that hurts his trade value, because the reason Orlando is trading him, it's not because he doesn't, you know, for a variety of reasons that you would normally trade a player. It's not really that. It's mostly that he's going to be expiring this summer, and they don't want to extend him, and they don't want to lose him for nothing. So you have to find someone who's willing to extend him. In that case, it's a team like Toronto that feels like, with Kevin Love being out with injury and Cleveland looking a little shaky in the last couple months and no one else being really strong in the East, Toronto feels like, screw it, let's go for it. Let's get this guy. And then even if he walks, he walks. But, you know, maybe they overpay to keep him just because that's where they are with their roster in terms of contracts and age. I think that's certainly a situation the Clippers are in, where if they were to acquire a guy, they would just overpay to keep him because they don't really have a chance to get outside help, and they need help. You know, it's not like the Clippers are in a position to let quality NBA starters walk away. And so I think what's interesting about this is that Danilo Gallinari, who the Clippers have been linked to in some trade rumors, is very much in the same boat as Serge Ibaka. Gallinari has a $16.1 million player option for next season, and Mark Stein of ESPN reports that the Nuggets expect him to opt out, meaning he's going to be seeking either A, more than $16 million a year, B, he wants a long-term contract rather than just taking 1 year $16 million. Maybe he's looking for, like, 3 years at $16 million apiece, or C, both. You know, he wants 4 years at $20 million apiece, or something like that. And that stings, it does, because Gallinari is not a star player, but I think he is a really good complementary piece. I think he's, like, a really good third option, probably. And then the other thing is, he's always had trouble staying healthy. He hasn't played the full season in, like, forever. I mean, I don't think he's ever played, like, an 82-game season, but in recent years, it feels like he's consistently in the 50s games played. So he's missing, like, 20 to 25 games a year. And that, yeah, that hurts. It hurts to pay a guy $20 million when you almost know that he's going to miss time, especially for the Clippers, because it feels like the Clippers always have stars who are always hurt, like Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. But you look at the things that he does well. He can play the 3 and the 4. He's a good defender. He doesn't always show it in Denver because he's also kind of tasked with being the main option on offense. But in a refined role, you'd think that his defense would be a little more consistent. You know, a lot of his problems in Denver come from, like, sort of focus, effort, energy levels, not necessarily from skill level. And when he's locked in, he's a good defender. And you'd think that on the Clippers, he'd have a little more energy to exert on that end, since he'd be asked to do less offensively. He's a good shooter and a volume three-point shooter. And he's really capable, I think, of being a two-way small forward in sort of the starting lineup, the Paul Reddick small forward Griffin Jordan lineup. But I think he's also capable of being the power forward next to DeAndre Jordan when Blake Griffin goes to the bench, which is something the Clippers have also been looking for, is like a stretch four. And Gallinari is kind of, he's like a stretch four and a two-way small forward. He does both. So I think that's something that would be of tremendous value to the Clippers, because you can take Gallinari off early and put in Luke Mbamute, and, you know, it can't be that bad because the Clippers have been starting Luke Mbamute for a year and a half. And then you bring Gallinari back in for Blake Griffin and let him play alongside DeAndre Jordan. And then you bring Blake Griffin and Mo Space back in with the second unit, and you kind of can stagger the lineups that way and always keep a couple scorers out there on the floor. I don't know. I think it would be a good fit. I think The contract and health thing are definitely concerns, but Serge Ibaka being sold for such a low value compared to what he went for last summer, I think might be sort of revealing to how trade value is being affected by the impending free agent market. And it's always a thing. Every year you see guys who, you know, you either trade him for something now or you lose him for nothing in the summer. But I think it's exacerbated this year by teams being wary of the huge cap figure and the huge amount of money free agents are going to get. So in a sense, that helps the Clippers acquire a player like Gallinari, because teams around the league are willing to give up less for him, because in the old cap, you might have been looking at like, okay, well, do we want to give Gallinari 4 years, $60 million? And now you're looking at, do we want to give Gallinari 4 years, $80 million? It's a big difference for teams. It makes it, you know, gives them like a lump in their throat to think about paying a player who they're not sure of that much money, which is why Denver wants to move him. But for the Clippers, I think that's the kind of risk that maybe you have to take. The question is, what does it take to get him? And that's probably a whole other podcast, and we've got time before the trade deadline to discuss different packages and, you know, how it could all work. But that's what I think. You know, I think the Serge Ibaka trade is really interesting for the Clippers just because of how it affects Danilo Gallinari's trade value, or maybe not affects, but reveals Danilo Gallinari's trade value. The other thing to keep in mind is that in that Mark Stein report that said the Clippers were monitoring Gallinari's situation in Denver, the other named team monitoring Gallinari was the Toronto Raptors. And presumably they're kind of out of it now with them having acquired Serge Ibaka. So maybe that means the Clippers now don't have someone to bid against. I'm not sure. Maybe there are other teams interested. Maybe Denver decides not to move him. I still think, looking at the pieces that would have to be moving in a trade like this, and what a guy like Austin Rivers means to the Clippers versus what he would mean to the Nuggets, who have a ton of good young shooting guards, I don't think this deal is necessarily likely. But I also don't think the Carmelo Anthony deal is likely, and I also don't think the PJ Tucker deal is likely. But it does seem to me that the Clippers probably are going to do something. And just because deals are individually unlikely doesn't mean that any deal at all is unlikely. So it's possible that one of these things, you know, these are the three we know about. There are probably, there definitely have been phone calls that we don't know about. And there definitely will be more phone calls in the next week. Does one of these, I would put the odds of these three individual trades, this Gallinari, Melo, and Tucker, I think all of them are more likely to not happen than to happen. But I'm not sure if I'm quite ready to say the Clippers are going to stand pat, especially a week out from the deadline. I think it's going to be interesting, and we're definitely going to have a lot to talk about in terms of the trade deadline as we go forward. I think I'm going to wrap it here, bring this episode to a nice close. As always, if you have questions or feedback or comments, or you want me to talk about something specific on the show, you can tweet me and let me know at Lucas J. Han. If you want to talk Clippers, you can tweet to the Clips Nation account at Clips Nation SBN. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. You can read my work at clipsnation.com. You can even like the Clips Nation Facebook page. It's just Clips Nation on Facebook. Type it in the search bar. Super easy. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to leave a review if you like the show on iTunes. And hopefully I'll be back tomorrow, depending on how the travel goes. But that's it. Thanks for listening. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.